In other words, the humanity and the machine merge together, almost like having a kind of weird sex merging together to produce a transhuman that is capable of eternal life, capable of exceeding the speed of light, and therefore able to master the universe, have eternal life, and become God. Now, Raymond Kurzweil took his 1999 book and came out with a new book in 2005, which was basically an update of his 1999 book. And the 2005 book was called The Singularity Is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. In other words, when we're no longer limited to this flesh, and we somehow supersede the flesh and become as God. It was about 10 or 12 years ago. I've shared this many times. As I was in the Los Angeles International Airport waiting for a flight, I engaged a man in conversation. He claimed that he was an international engineer for the Sony Corporation. And we were just chatting, and he was telling me about all the amazing technological developments and said that the time is coming when we wouldn't even need telephone instruments because they would all be implants. They would all be part of who we were. We would not need an external telephone set. And then, without batting an eye, he said, and the day is coming when we will be God. He was convinced the day is coming when we will be God. Friends, that's what Ray Kurzweil believes. And in reality, those who don't necessarily embrace his viewpoint directly believe it anyway when they arrogate their viewpoint over what God has said in his word. Whether they're a pastor, a broadcaster, somebody sitting in the pews that's pretended to follow the Lord all their life, and God says, thou shalt not commit adultery, and we commit adultery, we are arrogating our viewpoint over God, we are declaring ourselves transhuman, equal with God, and we have elevated ourselves and declared ourselves as gods. So we might as well get good at it, right? Now you begin to see why we have to repent. It's not just about the Ray Kurzweils of the world. No. It's pastors and people, all of us, who in one way or another have elevated our ideas, our thoughts, our reasonings, imaginations over what God has said. And isn't that exactly what Satan said to Eve in the garden? God knows that if you eat of that tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that the day you eat, you won't surely die. No, you will be as God. And now, he's going to make good on his promise, at least as good as he can. You and I have a choice. This is the direction of humanity on this planet. It's time for us to humble ourselves and repent. Be fully human and repent and submit to the God of creation. Fear God and worship him that made heaven and earth. That's the last message of the gospel in Revelation 14. Thanks for joining us. Become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Don't wait for the other guy to do it, friend. He's not doing it. We need your prayers, and we need your financial support. God bless and be a blessing. You've been listening.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next couple of hours are going to be the views of our good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And we're going to be talking about, well, we're going to talk in part about the change in the way health care is delivered here in the United States. Now, Russell and I date back a long ways. When I got out of medical school, we had county hospitals, and nobody in America without medical care. And we never talked about the necessity of killing the elderly because it was just too expensive to keep them alive. It was the responsibility of every community to provide health care for everyone. Certainly, if you were destitute, you got it for nothing. If you could pay part, you paid part. If you could pay the full sum, you could pay the full sum. And a lot of doctors gave their time, went to the hospitals and worked for nothing, because the purpose at that time was to help people. Medicine was a profession, not a business. We had to make medicine a business rather than a profession so it would work more efficiently, and look what's happened during the intervening years. Well, Dr. Blaylock's done a lot of work, certainly evaluating what has happened and certainly what the Obama health care bill really is going to do and what is going to happen to your ability to get adequate health care, especially as you get older. And there's a committee in Washington, D.C. that says, well, after a certain age, maybe 70, maybe 80, why, you're not entitled to health care. You're not entitled to maybe open-heart surgery, which would prolong your life 5 or 10 or 15 years, because the committee has decided. Russell, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Stan.
Why don't you sort of pick up the story, because I know you feel as deeply about this as I have, but you've had the time to really evaluate it. Where, what has happened, where are we going, and why?
Well, I think that it's important that people understand that as generations change, the new generation, not having the experience of the old generation, are very susceptible to a lot of these arguments that the collectivists and the socialists put forward. And as you pointed out, in past days, doctors gave away a lot of free medical care. Hospitals took care of everybody. There was a charity hospital system in Louisiana, where I grew up. And all of us spent time in the charity hospital taking care of these patients. So everybody got health care and worked very hard to get people well. And even in my own private practice, I gave away hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of business as health care, because that was your duty, to take care of people. And we didn't care whether they had money or not. If they were in distress, we took care of them. Well, that's been forgotten. Now we think that everything has to be purchased and paid for, and like you said, it's a huge national business now. So we can't even tolerate giving away medical care. And what a lot of people don't know, even the people who think that that they're journalistic experts in this area, I was interviewed by some, and they were surprised when I told them that it was against the law to give away free medical care to a federalized patient.
And the thing is, of course, that now the federal government's paying for so much of the health care dollar, and the trouble is they don't have the money. So what's the solution? Well, since you cannot, certainly, as over 65, you cannot buy a health insurance policy for primary care. In other words, you can't buy a hospital policy. You can go to the hospital you want to, but you can't buy them. And, of course, doctors are in a situation where they have to bill the same thing. You know, in fact, they have to jack up the bills to phenomenal amounts, you know, simply because that's the only way you get anything at all out of Medicare. And then, of course, if you go to that doctor, he has to charge you the same exorbitant price the doctor is forced to charge because of health care and government regulations, and he'd go to prison if he differentiated. You go right ahead with the story.
Yeah, and I thought this was one of the things that really shocked me, is that suddenly I was not allowed to give away health care or to give patients deductions on their bills. That was considered a crime now, because these were federalized patients and the government was treating them as government issues, almost like GIs. We own these people, and you treat them, you're responsible in answer to us. You can no longer give away free health care. You can no longer give insurance-only special compensation to these people, which ended up meaning that everybody was going to get paid for whether they wanted to or not, but it was the taxpayer that was going to pay the bill, and since the bill was far exceeded any tax revenues, then you have to fund it with deficit spending, so you're producing this massive trillion-dollar deficit we have now in Medicare and Medicaid, which has no hope of ever being paid, and now we're going to expand it even larger to cover everybody in the United States, whether they want it or not. And what, one of the observers, social observers a long time ago said that the essence of socialism is compulsion. No one asks you whether you want it. No one asks you whether you like your health care that you have or whether you want to have insurance. You're going to do it this way, and you're going to buy this policy that we design and approve of, or you can't have anything.
But, of course, what it is designed to do is to ration the access to health care and to prevent doctors from doing what's best for their patients according to what they believe they're going to have to give exactly the type of care that is determined by a committee in Washington, D.C., of people who've never seen that patient. And when doctors veer from these criteria that are laid out by the bureaucrats, why they would be subject to fine or imprisonment. What sort of madness is that, and where is the outcry? Well, there are a lot of people who don't like the system, but it doesn't matter whether the people want it or not. The elite want to impose this on the people so they can control them, and one of the big problems we have is there are too many old people. Well, that won't be a problem. They're ready as a death panel. They were not in the Obamacare bill. That's absolutely true. They were in the stimulus bill. But nobody will tell the American people. You go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, many of the things that I listened to when I was watching television debates on this was that, oh, well, there's no death panels in this. There's no funding of abortion in this. All of these things that they're assuring you are not there is a lie. But it's a very clever lie.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this Dr. Stan Dutch-Blaylock was just saying that, you know, you heard all these things, you know, why there's no death panels in this bill? There's no funding for abortion in these bills. And, you know, we've got some of the most clever liars in the world. And they can basically say that with a straight face. And the people will believe them. After all, the president wouldn't go on in national television and lie to the people, would he? Well, of course he would. I mean, George Bush lied. Why shouldn't Obama lie? And Bill Clinton lied. You remember when he was asked about having intimate relations with Monica Lewinsky? And he said, well, it's really what the meaning of the word is. Go right ahead.
Well, exactly. And what they do in this bill, that's really a clever bit of prestidigitation, is they say, well, there's no death panel in the bill. So a reporter reads the sections of the bill, and they say, well, I don't see it in there. But what you see in this bill, and essentially what this bill is, it's a blank check for the government. Because there's very little spelled out in the bill in great detail, except the destruction of the insurance company, the private insurance companies, for the most part, are going to be removed, and only a few are going to be allowed to exist. But the deception is that these concepts of, well, about funding abortion and death panels and take over medical education, they're very carefully couched because of the blank check idea. It says, this will be decided later by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And then you go to another section and it talks about, well, the elderly will be moved into having counseling about death and end of life. And if they have a serious illness, then they will be encouraged to go to these conferences. And then the government will approve who will be doing the counseling to the elderly concerning their death. And, of course, if we look at some of these organizations that will ultimately be approved, they're organizations that are promoting euthanasia. They're promoting withdrawing health care from the elderly to let them die. And they do it openly. For instance, the Hastings Institute, which Ezekiel Emanuel, who's Rahm Emanuel's brother and one of the architects of this, openly talks about. He's written a number of papers for that organization, position papers, which openly talks about we need to have come to a reality. We have to stop providing health care to these elderly and to these chronically ill. It's just a waste of resources.
In fact, one of the things he said is that, you know, we should not simply adhere to the Hippocratic Oath. After all, people should have doctors should have an obligation to society, not to their patients. People should have an obligation to society, not to their patients. What means that means well, society doesn't have enough money, and so the patient is going to have to be sacrificed. They want to undo, 4,000 years, 3,000 years of medical tradition and do away with the Hippocratic Oath. These people openly talk about it. But where are the editorials in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the Washington Post pointing what's really going on? Go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. The reporters, unfortunately, even reporters that are basically opposed to the bill, and as I said, I was interviewed by a reporter that really is interested in this bill objectively, but what I find is that their background knowledge of collectivism, socialism, and of other socialist healthcare systems is anemic at best. And that's being very generous. I started to tell him some of the things that were going on. For instance, I was talking about how physicians are being arrested over bureaucratic discrepancies in the law, errors in coding, which no one can seem to interpret, and that they're going to jail and their offices are being raided by police with guns drawn. And she said, oh, is that in the bill? And I said, no, that's been happening for the last 10 years. She wasn't even aware that physicians were being arrested. Physicians were losing huge amounts of money, $300,000 and $400,000, that they had to pay back to the federal government because the government came back and said, well, we disagree with how you coded those procedures. Well, you can ask attorneys. There's a number of attorneys who said, no one knows how to code these things. It's totally arbitrary, and the government can come back at any time and disagree with your coding and send you a bill for all the past charges, which can amount to several hundred thousand dollars. And they can confiscate all the records out of your office so you can no longer practice medicine. And all of this is magnified in this bill. Whatever we've experienced over the last decade with Medicare and Medicaid and the abuse of physicians, the humiliation of physicians, the fines, and even the prison terms are just a hint of what's to come. If you look in this bill, some of the most upsetting and frightening thing is the provisions about punishment. They call things like enhanced reporting and self-incrimination is going to be part of it because the doctor now is told you are responsible for knowing whether that anyone you deal with, in other words, if you are buying supplies from a medical supply business or you're sending somebody to a rehab business, the law says the physician is responsible to know whether those people are engaged in fraudulent behavior and that he will pay or she will pay the price for their fraudulent behavior. As if I have time to go investigate every company and referral that I make. No one has that kind of time. All of it has to be documented ad infinitum. And as I tell people, physicians will have no time to treat patients because they're going to have to collect reams and massive amounts of documentation meticulously on everything that they do, which is impossible. As I looked through the bill, I said, it's impossible to document these things. There's not enough hours in the day You would never take a vacation. Every weekend would be taken up with it, every spare moment. The documentation is just unbelievable. And as practicing physicians already know, the documentation for Medicare and Medicaid right now is massive. We're talking about things that's just mind-boggling. They also talk about enhanced power of law enforcement, that all the penalties in the new bill will be far greater than they were previously in what we're seeing now. It says, and I quote this from the bill, it said, with respect to violations of this section, a person need not have actual knowledge of this section or specific intent to commit a violation of this section, which is a violation of the law, basically saying intent. You know, most of the law about these violations is based on intent. You intended to defraud. You intended to do things. This says you don't even need any indication of intent, just that you violated a bureaucratic rule, even if you didn't know it was a rule. Now, what the public doesn't realize is in this bill and already existing are just thousands, tens of thousands of rules buried in hundreds of thousands of documents, which no physician, no group of physicians or lawyers would have time to ferret out and find out whether or not you're in violation of a statute or law. This bill compounds that enormously, so every physician will be in violation of something. And so it's just a matter of time or if the government chooses to prosecute them.
And the thing is, of course, that really what you're going to do is simply drive people out of medicine. You can't practice medicine if you have to worry about all of these things and their rules and regulations that they can change at any time, and you have no idea what they've done. But what you're going to do is put doctors into a position where they're just going to be afraid to do anything at all. They're simply going to be an extension of the federal government. Central planning didn't work in the Soviet Union. It's certainly not going to work here. But this is worse than anything they ever had in the Soviet Union. And I think they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to understand until it's too late.
Well, and also the interesting thing about this bill is you look at the whole bill, what you see is this is a rapid application of socialism to all of the United States, just almost overnight. It's going to affect every area of American life, because we're talking about in here that one of the sections says that it is important that the government know what's going on in the home in terms of child health care so that they will go into the home, collect data about everything to do with that family life. Well, that means that inspectors will come into your home and say, well, we want to know, do you own a Bible? Do you have literature that in any way says that Christ was resurrected? Because we feel as government officials that's harmful to the child's psyche. Do you have any books that criticize the government in your house? On and on and on, probing to see if you're in violation of some wish that they want, that you're not going to resist the government and resist these intrusions into your privacy. In other words, they own your child. You don't own. If you're in violation sufficiently, they could take your child away.
And I'm sure that very, very few, if any, of our elected legislators ever read the final bill, because they had one bill, and then the day or two before they were going to vote on it, they changed the bill entirely. Remember, President Obama, we want transparency. We want people to know what's in the bills. Nobody knew it was in the legislation. Harry Reid brought it in 3 days before they were to vote on it, would not allow any debate. And, of course, we got legislation. There's not one person in the 100 back there who knows what's in it. Well, Russell, you go right ahead.
Well, one of the interesting quotes from Nancy Pelosi when the bill was being presented in this short order for passage.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
Allowed to know this was put together by people who want a fascist America, and this is really what it's all about. And of course, Russell was talking about how they sold us on Medicare and Medicaid, and it was the most wonderful system. I started about 1965, and they promised we will pay your usual and customary fee, we will not quibble about the fees, we'll pay the hospital, we'll pay the drug fees, we'll pay anything, and that lasted. It was wonderful for a couple of years, and then we're going to have to, instead of paying the hospital the full fee, we'll pay them cost plus 1% and then cost minus 1%, and then eventually DRG is where, whether you're in the hospital one day or 100 days, they pay the same thing. And they begin to cut the doctors back more and more and more, and to the point where a lot of doctors really would be far better off being a plumber or certainly have something else, or certainly at least have a government job, at least you'd have a retirement. But what they are doing is terrifying the doctors to the point where they will be afraid to take care of their patients. People will live in constant fear. And you don't believe this is true? Ladies and gentlemen, they have a system of informants in America today. Go up on the Internet and look up InfraGard. InfraGard. It's an FBI program with tens of thousands of informants all across America. And anytime you're a member of InfraGard, you get special consideration from the government, special bulletins all the time about what's going on, and you can report anyone you want to without any fear that anyone will ever know. InfraGard. How could they set up a system like that in America? Well, everybody would know. There'd be an outcry. 60 Minutes would tell us, or would they? Go up on the Internet, find out if it's true. Are we headed the same way that they were in the gulags? Go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, and this is exactly what we saw in the Soviet Union. Over the years of reading about the Soviet system, as I began to see these systems start taking place in the United States, I became more and more concerned because, in the Medicare system, for instance, they set up a system where they would pay patients to turn in their physicians if they thought the physician either had performed some procedure they thought was unnecessary or overcharged them or for any reason. So if the patient was angry at the doctor for some reason, maybe I wouldn't sign a form to give them disability, then they could turn me in to the reporting agency, and suddenly I'd get a visit from a federal agency. Well, some of these visits turned into an attack by armed policemen. I mean, there are reports of physicians also being invaded by SWAT teams with weapons drawn, terrifying the patients and the office staff, holding the physician at gunpoint, as if they were raiding a dangerous drug gang. I mean, it's the physician in the middle of his practice, all over some bureaucratic coding problem. And then they would confiscate his records, including his private patient's records, hold them for months. Well, he can't practice medicine without records. So what is he supposed to do for an income? And then this would go on for months or years, and if they found him innocent, then he was just out the money. And a lot of patients left because they were scared that he was guilty of something. If he was found guilty, then they could rob his bank account for $300,000 or $400,000 and put him in bankruptcy.
Well, not only that, they could put him in prison. I mean, the doctors went to prison. And ladies and gentlemen, this is going on, and you're not hearing about it. But if you belong to the AAPS, as I do, you hear about this sort of thing. But it's totally suppressed by the media, and more doctors are getting more and more defensive. More and more are going to be leaving as soon as this comes in. Remember, this really doesn't kick in until about 2014. They're going to bring it in very slowly. So you won't realize it's sort of like boiling the proverbial frog. Only, ladies and gentlemen, you are the frog.
Yeah, I remember back years ago when I was practicing in High Point, this sort of thing happened where they were publishing doctors' names on the front page of the paper that they had defrauded the Medicare system. Well, I knew these physicians personally, and they never did any such thing. But it ruined their reputation. And this is the kind of thing you would see in a Soviet government.
Well, this is exactly what they did. The fellow on WikiLeaks recently, they didn't like what he was publishing about the war in Afghanistan. So they suddenly accused him of rape over in Sweden. And immediately after that, Elliot Spitzer, who was trying to expose the fact that the Bush administration knew the economy was going to collapse, the housing market, and what did they do? Why, they investigated him. They revealed he was having an affair with an expensive prostitute. If you don't like the message, you destroy the messenger. Go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, a couple of other things that of real concern this bill, and of which they denied vehemently on their interviews. One was that there's a marriage penalty in the law. An example of that is children up to age 26 are included in their parents' coverage unless they're married. If they're married, they're not. So we find a lot of instances in which there's these exclusions if you're not married, but if you're married, then you're penalized for having a normal family relationship. One of the things that really concerned me, and I found basically that almost everybody I was interviewed by, everyone I discussed this with, had no idea this was in the bill, and that is the total takeover of all medical education. That includes, as you read the bill, appointing professors who will teach medicine the way the government wants it taught, including residency programs. They will design residency programs for the different specialties. And they will, by using the power of the dollar, decide what specialty you'll go in, if you'll go into a specialty, or just be a family practitioner. And there's provisions in it, so this is really frightening, that says students who enter into the medical profession and medical schools under federal sponsorship will sign a contract that 10 years afterwards they have to be within a medical corps, which they say is exactly like the U.S. Army Reserve, which means, and it says this specifically, that you will be sent to areas that are underserved, not only in the United States, but the entire world, so that a student that's going through and he's obligated for 10 years, and now he's finished with his education, they can require him to go, for instance, to Pakistan.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and one of the things that Russell was pointing out was in the bill there is a stipulation that Sydney students, when they complete their education, can be sent anywhere in the world the government wants them to. Now, is that if they take money from the government, or is that simply a stipulation if you graduate from medical school?
Well, it's going to start out if you're getting federal sponsorship. That means if you get a partial loan, any money from the federal government, what's going to happen is private loans are already drying up for medical education. They no longer want to provide those loans for medical students. So that's going to leave the government to fill in the vacuum. So the vast majority and eventually all medical students will get their loans from the federal government, which means they will be obligated for 10 years to the federal government and can be sent anywhere in the world that they want to send them. This should horrify people that you can't even settle in your own community or a community of your choice without fear that during that time you could suddenly be activated and sent to some horrible place in the world that's very dangerous. I mean, they asked Obama that. He said, oh yes, these going to be, some of them will be dangerous places. People who are in medical school or wanting to go to medical school, they need to start paying attention to what this whole practice is going to be like. But this is a complete takeover of medical education. Now, as you remember, Rockefeller under the GED, that was one of his ideas as well, was to control education and the scientific institutions. And one of them was the California Institute of Technology. He appointed the professors. He set curriculum. He said it was very hands-on. And then he went to the Eastern Seaboard for the major universities, Ivy League universities, Harvard, Yale, Johns Hopkins, and did the same thing. Set up the professorships, decided who would be the head of the medical schools, and decided the curriculum that would be taught, so that the medical students, as they're coming through, they'll no longer know the things that Stan and I know about medical practice. It's going to be propaganda. It's going to be about abortions. It's going to be about forced vaccination. It's going to be about social engineering. That's what's going to be in the design. And if you read their documents from the tax-free foundations that are supplying these inputs to these bills, that's what they say. Our design is social engineering, the new man concept. That is to redesign society and the members of society so they think the way that the collectivist elitists want them to think. It's all Gnostic, you know. When we start looking at the history of all this, socialism, all the isms, communism, fascism, Nazism, they're all based on the Gnostic idea that there's an elite group of people who should make all the decisions, should design society, decide what all of us at the lower level should be doing. And Rockefeller, as you read his story, and people who read deeply into his works and knew him personally, this is how he felt about society, that there were a group of elites whose job it was to design not only the United States but the world itself. And that's what this globalism, internationalism, is all about.
In fact, he told David Rockefeller, told Congressman Dannemeyer, and he said, you know, some men are born to rule, most men are born to be ruled. It's just a passing comment he made, and Bill Dannemeyer told me that. Some men are born to rule, most men are born to be ruled. These people feel that they are the ruling elite, ladies and gentlemen, and you are simply to be utilized, your sons are to be sent off to fight and no-win wars. We will certainly make people infertile with the vaccines. We will do whatever we want to, because we are the people. We are the aristocrats who have the right to rule. You don't in this society, but that's why they hate our Constitution, why they've eroded it piece by piece, as we move from freedom to fascism to the rule by this self-appointed elite.
Exactly. Very well put. This is a Gnostic idea that began with the beginning of recorded history. And there's some great historians who have followed this Gnostic idea and show its direct lineage to today. If you look at the Illuminati documents, the books written from the examination of documents, it's the same thing. The people in the center are the rulers. They make all the decisions. They know what's best for society. Everybody else's job is to do what they're told. If you read this health care bill, you see the same thing. Well, it's social engineering. We know how a family should be constructed. We know what's best for a community, because they talk about redesigning whole communities. Most of the health care for the young people will not be through your local physician and hospital, but it's going to be through school-based health care centers, in which it says both acute and chronic health care and psychological health care will be given to your child, not always with your permission or knowledge. So it's an idea that the government now has become the parent of your children. And since the government elitists know best how to make society operate and design society, the child's mind must be taken away from the family structure and developed in their image. And that's what this bill does, and that's what these people in their writings openly talk about. You know, there's no confusion about their viewpoint on who should rule and who should make decisions. This social engineering idea, to me, is one of the most frightening in modern times, because if you follow it to its logical conclusion, and several people have written about this, one is Aldous Huxley, Brave New World Revisited, in which he talked about the ultimate goal and the ultimate capability of science is to remove the last vestige of your individuality, and that is your ability to think independently. Well, there's ways through neuroscience, and I've spent a lot of time studying neuroscience, there's ways to make you think thoughts that aren't your own.
Well, this is what they're doing with television, as you know. They're doing this with television, with movies, or with so many of the books, you know, with our programs like Jay Leno. They're molding the minds of the people, and they laugh. They don't understand that all of this is designed to control what you think, what you believe, who you are.
Yeah, and F.A. Hayek wrote about this as well. He talked about how people adopt ways of thinking and viewpoints that they assume are their own, but they're not. They were fed to them. And I tell my wife a lot of times that when I listen to people talk from the other side, what I hear is them repeating verbatim the very words that they heard on the news media or that they read in a magazine. None of them are their original thoughts. None have to do with a careful analysis on their part. They're repeating what they were told. So this subliminal injection of these thoughts in their mind, they think, I thought of that. But in fact, they were fed that. Well, that's the whole basis of propaganda. That's how propaganda works, is that you think you thought of it, but really I put it in your mind. I made you think that way without you knowing it. Well, you look at modern education, this NEA-based, government-led education we have in this country. The children are spending most of their time being brainwashed. They're being told that the idea of national sovereignty is wrong, that we're one world. They're telling them that, well, the most just thing would be to have a world judicial system, a world court, that the United Nations is the peacemaker, that states gave up their rights when they ratified the Constitution. All of these things are being implanted in the mind of these children, and so they grow up and think that's the truth. So when they talk to an older person and they say, well, that's not true, they say, well, that's what my teacher said, and my teacher knows what she's talking about. Well, it's the principle of brain function that if you don't teach that child by age 4 or 5 basic concepts of what you want them to know, you're going to lose them by the time they're 7, 8, 9 years old. Whoever has gotten to them before you will own their thinking, and they won't even know it. They'll think that they've gotten a good education, that they're well-founded, that they understand history and philosophy, and they're going to be upset and shocked when you tell them that a lot of what they learned is just not true.
You know, it's really very difficult to accept the fact that what you learn in college is not true. What we learned so much about, even what we learned about medicine, is not true. And, I mean, after all, you graduate, you've got a doctorate degree, you really think you're pretty smart. And when you begin, things come along and begin to challenge that. I mean, one of the things I believed in totally was evolution. I knew all about the Carboniferous era and the Cambrian era and all of these eras, you know, billions and billions and billions of years ago, and science had proven all of these things, and it was all a lie. But it's so hard to deprogram your mind, just as it's so hard for young people today to understand, what is really going on, and that they've been lied to by their teachers. Most of them do not understand America, our Constitution. They don't even understand what liberty or freedom are about. They don't understand that there really are secret and covert organizations out there that are intent upon molding their mind and shaping their ideas and their tastes, and yet this goes on every single day. And, of course, one reason I do what I do, and I know one reason why you do what you do, is at least we have an opportunity to reach people all across the country with information they're never going to get from the controlled media. Because the first thing that these wicked people did was to take over control of the media and the journalistic schools. And then, of course, we have people in the media who've never had a serious thought. We've got some good people there. But if they try to print the truth, why, they'll lose their job, or at least their articles simply will be spiked and never published. So they carefully control what the American people believe.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, people like you and I and others that pay attention to these things and have spent decades reading thousands of documents and books and pamphlets and these people's writing, you know, what's happening now is not that much of a surprise to us as it is to most people. You know, I talk to people that are just shocked. They think it all started with the Obama administration. And I start going through some history and tell them, well, you know, back in the 1800s, almost as soon as the Constitution was ratified, it was under attack. And one of the shocking things for people to learn is that republic was close to collapse almost immediately. By 1830, the country was almost ready to divide. And the interesting thing was, and this is historically provable, was that some of the northern congressmen, in fact, went to one of the southern congressmen and told him, said, I think it was Taylor of South Carolina, and told him that, you know, the North and the South is just never going to be able to work commercially, and we need to separate. And another congressman came into the cloakroom and said, yeah, you know, we really need to separate the Union into North and South, because we'll never work together, because we're manufacturing interests and they're an agricultural interest, and it's divergent. Well, most people don't know that this idea of a separation really started with the northern merchant class. It didn't start in the South. But the real battle between North and South began with the tariff dispute in the 1830s. Had nothing to do with slavery. And the Southerners felt like they were being, the Southern states felt like they were being at a disadvantage for this tariff that benefited the Northeastern manufacturers. And so they said, this is unconstitutional. Well, James Madison agreed. Thomas Jefferson agreed. So the person who wrote most of the Constitution agreed that this was unconstitutional, that a tariff could be passed, a tax, essentially, that benefited one section of the country and harmed another. And as John C. Calhoun pointed out, the purpose of a tariff is to collect revenue, and anything outside of that should be null and void. Well, it was the tariff issue that brought forth the idea of nullification, was that if a law is passed that is definitely unconstitutional, a state has the right and the obligation to nullify it and say, we're not going to follow this law. Well, you know, there were many nullification battles in the United States. Well, in modern times, the biggest example of nullification is the sanctuary cities movement. These people just say, well, we don't care what the immigration laws say. We're going to let these immigrants into our cities and ignore the federal government and the immigration law. So even though they think, and they'll convince the public that our efforts at nullification are wrong and racist, actually, they're the ones who first, on a grand scale, used nullification law. Well, many of the founding fathers, Jefferson and Madison, strongly believed, and President Tyler believed in nullification. So that's the state's only defense against this. Well, in this modern time, here we are again, at this same battle that went on from 1830 to 1865 in our country. Now we're facing this idea of nullification again. And we have three states that have already come forward because they're going to nullify this health care bill.
Well, I think that we have to, and we have to understand that this was not done with the consent of the people. The vast majority of people were against it, and they simply bribed and twisted arms, and they spent, you know, they'll do whatever they have to. They've got city dossiers, and all the congressmen threatened to out them because they're homosexual or because of their extra marital sexual affairs. These people are ruthless in what they're doing. Well, certainly our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment about this, are you concerned that they have simply stripped America of the last vestige of our Constitution with this bill, totally unconstitutional? Our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, will be back in a moment. Russell, we've got 3 minutes more in this segment of the program. Go right ahead.
Well, as I was saying, I think nullification is probably our last defense. After that, we have nothing else.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com.
Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you out there in the listening audience who listen to us if you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, that there really are sinister supernatural forces at work in the world today. If you agree with that supposition, we hope many of you, if you're in a position to help Radio Liberty, you'll give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And if you're not in a position to help us, that you'll pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. Someday, to understand what's going on, you really need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to read the little pamphlets we have called The Occult Hierarchy. There are three of them there, but they go into the background of the founding of this country. And, of course, the occultists have been around for almost 5,000 years, since the days of Nimrod, working for where we are today. Because, you see, America is being used to bring about the world government. That's why we have our troops in 130 to 140 nations. That's why we have 720 military bases throughout the world. Who are we defending against? We're not. We're establishing the empire, which, of course, is to rule the world, and then eventually, of course, be subjugated by this one-world occult government. And that's what people really don't understand, because along with the new world, one-world government, comes the new one-world religion. And that is a very large part of what this is about. Now, we do have an excellent book. If you've never read it, you need to get a copy. They're secondhand. They're out of print. But we have Barry Goldwater's book, With No Apologies, and you need to get that along with my four-tape set on the secret government. This is a very important book, The Secret Government, and you need to understand there really is a secret government that controls both political parties and makes mockery out of the electoral process, and they control the media, control the banking system, and they control in large part what the American people think. Barry Goldwater's book, With No Apologies, available from Radio Liberty. Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. We even have the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, Suppressed for 50 Years. You can get that with the Tragedy and Hope special. You can get our Secret Government special, which includes three, four tape sets, or some of these are available on the CD. You need to understand that there are people out there working behind the scenes who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. And then, of course, we suggest the DVD, the Trilateral Commission by Pat Wood, and you'll find out the power that these people have. President Obama is simply a figurehead. We point to President Obama, but he will do nothing. He is not allowed to do anything. He does what he is told to do. Until you understand that, nothing really makes sense, and you're going to get caught up in this, oh, Obama's a Marxist, Obama's a communist, Obama's and they'll tell him, oh, he's a Muslim. That's one of the big things now, he's a Muslim. And certainly all those things, there'll be an element of truth in them. But the important thing is the figurehead for the Brotherhood of Darkness. And he does what he's told to do. And if he did not, why they would send him on a trip to Dallas? If you doubt that they killed John Kennedy, you need to get our four tape sets. We have two of them. One of them is a two-hour interview with Lyndon Johnson's mistress when she tells you about the meeting the night before when they planned the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. We've got a great DVD on the subject. And, of course, very soon we're going to be carrying the book Double Cross, written by the brother of the head of the mafia who tells how they did it, and we'll have that book very shortly. You need to get this information. We have a four-tape set on, or four-CD set on how they killed Martin Luther King, about the trial that the King family sponsored. We have a book written by William Pepper, who was hired by the King family. None of these will ever be mentioned by the media. We have a four-tape set, a DVD, and a book on how they killed Bobby Kennedy. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. We even have interviews with the survivor of the USS Liberty, when, of course, our government wanted to kill all of those American servicemen. Give us a call, and please pray for Radio Liberty. Money, and we'll give it to you if you do that. The federal government has no money. They take it by us by force, and then they use that money to violate these concepts of states' rights and state sovereignty, and they bribe people, and they certainly will put money out to get people elected in the state legislature. But what we really need to do is to take America back. If it's going to be taken back, people listening to this audience will have to get involved. They're going to have to get involved. We're taking America back block by block, and precinct by precinct, city by city, county by county, state by state. We cannot take it back from above, because they can put up enough money to by any one of our senators or any one of our congressmen, and they, believe me, most of them are for sale. But, Russell, you pick up the story. How can we get this concept of nullification, people to understand it, that if we don't take back, certainly the right to regulate what happens in our own communities, if we allow all power to be transferred to Washington, D.C., then freedom, as we've known it, will soon become simply a remembrance of things past.
Well, that's exactly true. And what we see is that founding father recognized this almost immediately after the ratification of the Constitution, that if you left government to itself, it's gradually going to erode all the powers of the state. It's going to dissolve the state and take over everything. I'll read you what Madison wrote in Federalist 41. He said, if Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. They may assume the provision of the poor. They may undertake regulation of all roads and post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress.
Sounds just about what's going on today, where we have, you know, the Federal Education Department, you know, the rewarding schools when they teach the children to go along with the international agenda. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock right here at Radio Liberty. Russell, you go right ahead.
Well, that section of Federalist 41 I read from Madison was in 1792. So we see from the very beginning they were plotting to take away all of the state's right and make the central government absolutely powerful. Now, we had fought a war with England to free ourselves. We established independent states, and it went through a very difficult ratification process for all the states even agreed to sign on to this Constitution and a national and a federal government. Well, very quickly, they tried to dissolve the states and say, well, now there's no more states. Well, as Madison points out, it's written very plainly in the Constitution. We retain our powers. We only give the federal government powers that the states decide to give to the federal government. All other powers we retain for ourselves. This is a battle. This idea of states' rights has been a battle from the very beginning of the ratification. It's never ended. And likewise, the nullification battle has never ended from the very beginning. Because actually the first references to nullification began long before the debate that led up to the Civil War. It began with tariff debate. Jefferson, and the Alien Sedition Act. This was what the Virginia and Kentucky Resolution was about, was nullification of the Sedition Act primarily, that the government was beyond any criticism, and that anyone who criticized the federal government, any of its members or any member of Congress in any way, could be arrested and imprisoned for 2 years and fined $2,000. So we say very early in the formation of our republic, here comes a law that is plainly and clearly unconstitutional, and the response was, well, the states will nullify it. We just refuse to do it. Well, later, under Andrew Jackson, when we saw there's a battle over the tariff, and the state of South Carolina said, well, we're not going to collect the tariff for the federal government, because it's unconstitutional. And so they nullified it. Well, Andrew Jackson's response was the force bill, in which he said, well, we'll send federal troops in and make you collect it. Well, South Carolina's response was, well, we'll train our militia and we'll stop you at the border.
Well, this is Dr. Stan Russell's talking about, certainly it was under Andrew Jackson, where they had a tariff, and why the people of North Carolina said they weren't going to actually to collect the tariff, and Andrew Jackson said, well, we'll send troops in to enforce it. So then what happened?
So the state of South Carolina activated its militia and trained its militia and said to Andrew Jackson, we'll meet you at the border, and we'll fight you. We're not going to let you into our state, and we're not going to collect it. It's unconstitutional. Well, very quickly, the Congress saw that this was going to be a major problem, and they didn't want a war between the U.S. government and the state of South Carolina. Now, you have to realize most of the nation up north disagreed with nullification and thought it was treason. And they thought South Carolina was being treasonous by activating its militia and resisting the federal intrusion. Well, it's interesting, just a very short time later, it was the northern states who were using nullification, and suddenly they came around and said, well, you know, the South was right. If we don't stop the federal government, nothing's going to stop them, and they're going to take over all of our rights. So when it was their ox being gored, then suddenly they saw the wisdom of nullification. So
you know, it's interesting, Russell, that, you know, when the Civil War came, the American people don't know that there were draft riots in the North. The Americans, the Northerners, didn't want to fight the Southerners. They killed 2,000 Americans who were draft resistors in the draft riots at that time. We never teach that, of course, in high schools. That we taught the Civil War was about slavery. Had nothing to do with slavery. They didn't pass the Emancipation Proclamation until, I think it was 82 or 83. I mean, it was just, they had to have a justification for killing all those people.
And the Emancipation Proclamation was a war tactic.
Sure.
Lincoln was losing the war. They had not won a battle with the South. And he knew that he was losing the support of the people in the North. And so he made this Emancipation Proclamation hoping that the black slaves would riot and take up guns, and then the Southern Army would be so busy trying to defend itself, then the Northern Army could come in and defeat them. Well, it didn't work.
Well, of course, the Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves in the South, where, of course, Lincoln couldn't free them because he had no authority.
Right.
But it didn't free the slaves in the North, where he could have freed them. It was all, ladies and gentlemen, part of the propaganda at that time. We've got Mario calling from Flint, Michigan. Mario, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I remember a couple of years ago hearing stories that there was a school district with, I don't remember what state or what city, where they told the parents before the school year started that they wanted to vaccinate every child, but I don't remember this either, whether it was for H1N1 or what it was, but each student would be vaccinated before they could start the school year at that school. And all the parents, by and large, the parents rebelled and wouldn't stand for their children being forced to have a vaccination, and so they had to back down on it.
That's the thing, Mario. If people stand up, they will back down. They did the same thing with the health care workers in the state of New York. Do you have any comment at all on what Mario is saying? Because, Russell, in many ways, this is what it's really all about. The people, the elite, get by with what they're doing by fraud. Let's get Russell's remark. What are your thoughts, Russell?
Well, I think the case he's referring to occurred in Maryland. And what happened was that the court in Maryland ruled that the children starting high school had to have all their vaccinations at once, and if the parents didn't do it, they would be fined this huge fine. So the children, I forgot how many hundreds of children, were brought into the courtroom, forcibly vaccinated with some 15, 17 vaccines in one day, which is atrocious. I wrote a letter to the editor to a paper in Maryland, and I said that the governor of Maryland should be prosecuted for a crime, and he should have to say whether or not his children have been vaccinated. Well, the press asked him that, and he refused to answer. He said, that's my private business. Well, he didn't think it was the private business of those families whose children were assaulted in a courtroom. Well, that's a perfect case of where we should have had nullification. You know, and jury nullification was a principle from the very beginning of the founding of this country, and even before the country was founded, was that if a jury felt like the court and the prosecutor were prosecuting a law that was unfair, they could vote not guilty no matter what the facts showed. Well, the modern example of that on the negative side of jury nullification was the Simpson trial, in which the jury just said, we don't care what the facts are, whether he's guilty or not, we're going to vote not guilty. Well, we can use that as well to defend people against abuses in IRS court and against abuses in cases of the FBI and invasion of doctor's offices and alternative medicine offices and supplement companies, and in cases like this vaccine court, where the jury just said, well, I don't care what the facts are, I vote no. And that is your right. No matter what the judge directs the jury to do, he cannot direct the jury to vote a certain way. So the jury, no matter what, can say, no, I'm voting not guilty.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Mario. And certainly I think that the idea of we've got to be able to nullify and the people have got to be willing to take a stand. And, well, if you take a stand, you could be criticized. You might even be demonized by the local media. You might even get arrested. Well, ladies and gentlemen, an awful lot of people have died for freedom. What sacrifice are you willing to make for freedom? Because if there are not enough people who care about freedom, then we're going to lose it. Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, you know, that's always struck me. You know, when I look at the fate of POWs, the suffering they went through, when I see soldiers and when I used to work at the VA who was terribly injured and lost limbs and blind, I think all of these people have sacrificed so much for the principle of freedom and to protect this country. And then I'll talk to a person out there and say, well, I agree with you, but, you know, I have to worry about my business and I don't want to lose my invitation to social function if I speak out for that. And I think what a contrast that here these young men are losing their lives and their limbs and being grievously injured, and then this guy is worried about his social standing. So he won't defend freedom under any condition, and every sacrifice is too great a sacrifice. And you think you should be ashamed of yourself. But this is what we've seen throughout history. I mean, look how many people fought for American independence. Well, it wasn't but 10% of the people did all the fighting. 90% reaped the benefit. But they weren't willing to sacrifice anything. Well, it's always that way. In every battle, it seems to be fought for principle. And nowadays, you know, our youth have been so brainwash is that you're laughed at if you're willing to fight for a principle. What kind of idiot would fight for a principle? You fight for money. You fight for some kind of advantage, power. But who but an idiot would fight for principle? I remember reading that in one of the books I have on the Civil War, is that some of the people from above the Mason-Dixon line in Congress were shocked that the Southerners would fight for a principle. Who fights for a principle? And that's where we've come today, is that we're just not willing, nothing is worth fighting for if it requires any kind of sacrifice whatsoever or any risk. Well, of course you're going to be attacked in the media. You're going to be attacked by these people viciously. We've seen that time and time again. I mean, look at Sarah Palin, the way she's been just viciously attacked, a horrible personal thing. But that's the type of people we're dealing with. They're not gentlemen. They're not ladies. They're vicious. And one of the old sayings that I always quote is that if you can't answer a man's arguments, all is not lost. you can still call him vile names. And that's the principle they live by.
Well, I Winston Churchill, unfortunately, was not quite the man I wish he was, but he had a wonderful way with words. One of the things he said that I've always remembered, still, if you will not fight for the right, when you can easily win without bloodshed, when you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you will come to the moment when you'll have to fight with all odds against you and only a perilous chance of survival, or there may be a worse case. You may have to fight when there is no hope for victory, for it would be better to perish than to live as slaves. And I wish that they were teaching that in our schools today. They were giving people the idea that there are things that are worthwhile fighting for, there are things that are worthwhile dying for. The thing is that, of course, if we have right on our side, there is a subversive element in this society. The people who work within the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers in this country have a subversive agenda. They have great wealth behind them. They have the power of the banking industry and the foundations behind them. And they certainly control the military and police. But they are subversive, and their purpose, they've sworn to uphold our Constitution, many of them working within government, and they're doing everything they can to destroy that. And we need to get people to understand that there is a subversive element that controls our nation. It's an invisible government. How are we going to do that, Russell?
Well, it's going to be very difficult, and it's going to require a lot of sacrifice for a lot of people.
You hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. We're going to go to Bruce, who's calling from Spokane here, and we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock talking about nullification. What's really worthwhile fighting for? Is there anything worthwhile fighting for or dying for today? Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Russell Blaylock.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. 844-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
Years ago, and this has been proven by science. And of course, science requires that you can actually demonstrate this once, and then you can demonstrate it again. Well, who can demonstrate how long the dinosaurs have been dead? You know, was anybody around to see them? How could we be absolutely certain that this isn't simply conjecture? But they have used science and this science to undermine belief in the Bible, and yet so much of the science is totally fraudulent. When I went to college, they had the missing link. I mean, they knew the missing link. It had been demonstrated scientifically. It was the Piltdown Man, and this was certainly, it looked like the skull of a man and the jaw of an ape, and that's exactly what it was. And for 50 years, all these smart scientists accepted this until somebody noted that they'd dyed the jaw and they'd filed down the teeth, and it was all a lie. How many other lies have the scientists accepted? They should all certainly, I think, reside and go back to school again. Bruce, do you have any other question for our guest?
Well, yes. He spoke earlier of the actual changing of the thinking process in the mind, the reasoning, the accountability level. All these things have changed since the public school has taken away the education of students. Now, for example, we have a church in this area, an incredibly large church, takes over half a city block. At one time, when they built it, it cost $8.5 million to build. And on Sunday morning, the parking lot's fairly full. But when you pass by there the rest of the week, there's hardly a car in the lot. What that means is that's an underutilized building, and they should have the parishioners' children going to school there. That is a massive waste of resources. And if they really care about their children, they should be taught differently.
You're absolutely right, and thanks very much, Bruce. And certainly, how would you respond to that? Certainly, don't you think that churches bear part of the responsibility, Russell, for where we are today, that they have not insisted on and the Christian children going to Christian churches? At least traditionally, the Catholic children went to Catholic churches, Catholic schools, even though that they're backing away from that responsibility. But certainly, so many of our Christian churches simply say, well, we don't have to worry about what they're being taught in the schools, and they do not speak out against what's going on in the schools, and they refuse to use their facilities and their wealth to take the responsibility for the children who are the future of this nation. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of the things that struck me looking at the whole religious experience in America and how it's changed is that I see a lot of religious leaders who are almost embarrassed to say they believe in the resurrection, or embarrassed to say they believe in judgment and heaven and hell and the spirit. They say, they start hedging their terms when they're on the television or being interviewed or in a science forum. Oh, well, this is not literal. I don't actually believe there's a heaven and hell, and I don't actually believe that Jesus was resurrected and that he was the Son of God. You see a lot of them feeling a sense of embarrassment because of the enormous power of science in the modern world. It's almost a priesthood and has replaced religion. When I studied the history of science, it used to be agreed amongst the scientists, this is in the 1800s and such, in the 1900s, early 1900s, was that science could only answer a very small number of questions. It only could examine things that were reproducible on a regular basis. Everything else was a mystery. And it admitted that most of what occurred in the universe was a mystery and beyond science to know anything about. And therefore, that was relegated to philosophy and to religion. Well, what we've seen our science ironically do is it's confirmed these religious beliefs. Because, you know, I spent a lot of time reading physics. And basically what physics says is that there's no matter, everything's energy. And then you ask them, well, what is energy? Well, energy is nothing. And when it stops moving, it disappears and it's not there. Well, then you read the Bible and it says all things are made by God's word and are made from nothing. So it took physics all of these centuries to come to the same conclusion that was in the Bible from the very beginning, that everything is made from the word of God. So a lot of what physics is doing is confirming the truth of Scripture, but unfortunately, our young people are not paying attention.
And of course, many of the scientists they're actively involved on the other side. They hate God, and they will lie to the students. Mr. Dawkins there at Cambridge University, when asked by Ernie Siegel, you know, where did life come from? He said, oh, well, of course, it came from other planets. Of course, that's where it came from. We'll be back in just a moment here. Russell, you go right ahead. And certainly I share your concern about scientists. Certainly an honest scientist would say there's certain things we cannot confirm. We cannot confirm how old the Earth is because we just don't know. And we cannot say when the dinosaurs died out because, of course, nobody was there to confirm it. And you can't reproduce something when nobody was there. So go right ahead.
Well, when you really get deep into science, you know, it's as many years as I've been studying, and as deep as I get into it, what I come away with is the mystery begins to appear. You know, I've spent a long time studying the brain and how it functions, and neurons and how they function. Every day that I pick up a journal, they're finding new ways that cells communicate internally. And there's literally thousands of things in there that are operational, and they have to be exact. They depend on each other, which negates the evolution, because they can't occur one at a time. They have to all be there at the same time, or it doesn't work. There's no purpose for it. So as you begin to really get into science, deep into it, you begin to see the mystery of creation, and you begin to see God's hand in things. The problem with the scientists, and as Dawkins admits, even if God exists and you proved it, I wouldn't want to believe in it. So it's not that I can't make a good case for creation. It's that he doesn't want to believe it, even if he saw God himself and God told him, I'm here. He doesn't want him. And the reason they don't want him is because belief in God puts limitations on your behavior. It says, these are things you shouldn't do. These are things you should do. Well, nothing upsets them more than to be told there's things that they do that's wrong. And in interviews with many of these scientists who are really vicious in attacks on religion, admit that. They don't like religion because it limits their behavior. And what we consider sinful behavior is what they enjoy most. And therefore, they don't want the idea that a God says that's sinful and you shouldn't do it.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. And this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking to Russell about why scientists reject logic. Well, they reject logic because they don't want to accept God. I mean, after all, if you look at everything, everything is in perfect order. It didn't just happen by accident. There had to be some sort of design, but they don't want to accept that. Because, of course, if you accept God, then there is there's certain laws or absolute truths. There are things that you should not be doing. And so many of these people are totally immoral. They call themselves scientists, but they're really immoral people. They know very well that what they're teaching is a lie, but it's all a rejection of God. And really, this is sort of so much of what's going on in the world today. There are no absolutes. There's no right. There's no wrong. Man can do whatever he wants to. Look and see what's happening to our society today. When we have man doing whatever we want to, when you have a Christian society where people are answerable to God, they act responsibly. When you have a society where they're not responsible to God, then why not cheat and steal and murder and do all the terrible things going on today? And people say, oh, what are we going to do about the increased crime? Well, maybe we ought to put God back in the school again. Oh, we couldn't do that. Violation of the law of separation of church and state. Ladies and gentlemen, they took God and prayer and the Bible and the Ten Commandments out of our society and out of our schools because they wanted to destroy our nation. They're doing a great job of it. Russell, you go right ahead.
Well, and you look back at the history of socialism, the collectivism, the Illuminati. Their number one enemy was always religion. You know, when you ask them, well, what is your chief enemy? What is your chief obstacle to success? Well, it's religion, because religion, as you so clearly pointed out, teaches an objective truth and where you go for that truth. Well, socialism is based on the fact that certain elites are the repositories of truth, and you go to the elites to find out what's true, and truth changes as their mind changes, as new elites take power. And then suddenly we have a new truth. Well, I always tell people that's like trying to play a football game, but every quarter we change all the rules. You make a touchdown and they say, well, oh, we changed the rules. Now that counts on our side. Well, nobody could play a football game if you're constantly changing the rules. But that's what they want to do. They say, well, you know, we've got new official cases in, so we change the rules, and now when you make a touchdown, I get the point. Now when you tackle somebody, actually, that's a violation. And as businessmen tell you, you can't operate in a socialist society because the rules are always changing. You never know when you're in violation. You never know when you're going to go to jail. You never know when your business is going to be taken over. The same for physicians. You don't know when you're considered a criminal by your government because you tried to help someone. You know, it's like the physician who operated on the 70-year-old man for his cataracts. The guy can see now. He plays golf. He enjoys life. And they put the doctor in jail for 10 years because they said he abused a federally owned patient by giving him sight, that he didn't need that cataract surgery, that he could have gotten along well with a stick with a red tip on it and a dog, say an eye dog. There was no reason for him to get out of his house. Well, this is the cold-hearted nature of socialism. They like to sell themselves that they're the compassionate ones. But when you see socialism in action, it's cold-hearted and it's heartless, because it tells this elderly person, you really don't need your life. It tells this person, well, your relative doesn't need to live. Well, this person with MS should die for the good of the country. This is the cold-hearted facts of socialism. And people believe the rhetoric that they use to sell the programs rather than the truth of what socialism does. I mean, it's been, for instance, in the National Health System of England, they showed just in one community, thousands of people die every year because of the socialist system, because of denying care, because of poor level of care. Now you multiply that for all of England, you're talking about 10, 20,000 people a year dying because of socialism. Well, that's pretty cruel. They would never sell it if you knew the truth of what socialism was going to produce. And that's what this health care bill does. When you look at it, I know what these things do. I've studied all the socialist systems in the world. And I can tell you this bill is going to be the responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands of people, if not more. And purposely so. It is very, very cold-hearted. And you read the words of the people who helped write this bill. They are as cold-hearted as anybody in the Nazi regime or in Stalinist Russia. Because they think they should decide who lives and who dies. Whose grandmother is worthwhile and whose is not. And that's what the socialists do. They make these decisions, not you. You can't make that decision.
Well, you know, it's so difficult for people to believe that anything could be this evil, but this is really what it is. And when you actually begin to analyze this and you go into the roots of socialism, you go back to Karl Marx, and we have a wonderful little book, Marx and Satanism. And you read what Karl Marx actually wrote. He wrote a number of poems about his satanic faith. Well, how could that be? I mean, certainly if that was true, why, we would know that. It would be taught in schools and universities. I mean, the idea of Marx being a Satanist is just ridiculous. The book was written by Reverend Wormbrand, who spent 14 years being tortured in a Romanian prison. And when he got out, he couldn't figure out why. Why would they want to treat him so badly? And he began to study Karl Marx. Karl Marx was a Satanist. And this whole thing, this whole socialist scheme, is founded in a revolt against God and a hatred of mankind. And when you understand that, why, it all makes sense. Suddenly they can't tell you what they really want. They've got to tell you about compassion. They've got to tell you about they want health care for every American. They really don't. They really want to destroy our society. They want to kill off the elderly. They want to withhold care for people that they feel lives are not worth living. I had the aortic valve replacement when I was 79. I would be dead by now if I hadn't had that replacement. But, of course, under the new system, I would not be able to get it. And if a doctor were to do this for me, certainly when I paid him, that doctor could go to prison. This is what we're really facing here in America. And we're going to be forcing our people to go to other countries to get health care, just as today so many people in Canada have to come to the United States to get the health care and the reconstructive procedures and the other things they need. Socialism is a sincere, benevolent, idealistic concept, but it doesn't work without force, and somebody's going to be in charge and determine who lives and who dies. But as the professor of orthopedics at Edinburgh University told me when I was in Scotland many years ago, and asking him how the socialist system worked, he said, well, we have two lists. One is for the average people. We have an emergency list and an elective list. If you have an emergency, we'll put you in the hospital. If you're on the elective list, we never get to you unless you are a commissar, and that was the word he used, commissar, a government employee, and then, of course, we are forced to take you and get the elective surgery. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how it really works, and this is going to how it works in America. And what are the American people going to do? Are they going to sit back and say, well, I don't want to be involved because, after all, I could become controversial. I might come under pressure. Maybe the government would know that I oppose them, or maybe... Are there enough people who really value freedom that we can preserve this nation for generations unborn? Go ahead, Russell.
Yeah, and on another story I read in one of the books on Obamacare, and it was about one of the parliamentary members in Quebec who went to the United States to one of our best clinics to have his heart valve replaced as well. And they asked him, so, well, why did you go to the United States? You're supposed to be promoting Canadian health care as the greatest in the world. And he said, well, it's my heart, and I want to take care of myself. They don't live. These politicians making these decisions don't have any illusions about what they're creating or what it's going to do. The only reason Congress agreed to pass this bill was because it was assured, well, you're not going to come under it. You're going to have your own health care system, and you'll get to see the best doctors the United States can provide in special clinics, and you won't have to wait. These rules won't apply to you. Well, that was the only reason they agreed to do it. Now, if we wanted to stop this bill dead in its tracks, what we should have done is said this bill cannot be passed unless all of Congress is included, as ordinary people. I guarantee you it wouldn't have lasted one day. It had been voted down immediately because they always exclude themselves. That's what they did with Social Security. These things are absolutely incredible. When you start tearing away all these false layers that they present to the media and the media present to the mass of the people about, oh, this is all about compassion, oh, this is all about fighting racism, oh, this is about poor little kids who don't have health care. They know that's a lie. They're not deceived. They know very well that they have to sell this just like a carnival barker. To get you to buy it, and once you buy it, then you'll find out, just like Nancy Pelosi said, now you'll find out what it really is. Well, it's too late then. I mean, read the history of National Health Service in England. It was a horrible disaster for almost its entire history, and now they're just in a quandary of, well, should we turn it over to the private health care? It's just costing so much money, people are dying regularly. There's so much dissatisfaction. The quality's horrible. The hospitals are ancient. Medical progress is just almost halted in these countries.
Well, because in England, I think more and more people are allowed to buy their own health insurance over there. If you've got money, you can buy your health insurance. The thing is that you're not going to be able to buy your health insurance here in the United States. That's the difference.
That's right.
And at least in England, after it was such a catastrophe, and the people were just so furious with this, the lies had been told, that they were allowed to buy their own health care. I know Steve DeVos, I think that's his name. Anyway, he's the fellow from Amway, and he wanted to get a total heart, a new heart. Certainly, he didn't want to wait on a list here in the United States. He went over to England, where they have the private hospitals, and you'd never guess. As soon as he walked in the front door, the heart suddenly came in, and he got a new heart. And he said, well, of course, I didn't get any special consideration. Anybody believes that? Got to be incredibly naive. When you got millions of dollars, you get all sorts of special consideration, whether it's certainly over there in Great Britain. But here in the United States, you're not even going to be able to buy that sort of thing under this new system.
Well, you see, all through Europe and Canada, they knew that the system would collapse if they didn't open it up to a two-tier private and national health service. That was the only reason it survived at all, because it was going to die, and the people were going to revolt. But because the people behind this want this to be absolute, no escape, it's going to be the worst example of national health care anywhere in the world, except maybe the Soviet Union. And if you read the Soviet system, it was unbelievable because they purposely killed people in their system to get rid of them. One of the stories I read about the Soviet system, a doctor that visited it, said that in the clinic they put the EEG machine on the very top floor of the hospital and the elevator never worked. So the heart patients had to walk up, seven flights of stairs. Well, a lot of them died on the way up. And they did it on purpose. Well, I heard the same thing in Canada, that half the time the elevators don't work in the hospital. So, they create this illusion to sell it, and they've sold the United States the worst, most oppressive, dictatorial system that is going to usher socialism at all levels of the United States. This bill is not just about health care. It's about the total socialization of America. And it's going to create a police state situation. Because, like I said, according to the health bill, designing the community's health care comes under the purvey of the federal government. So it tells how you're to design your community, how you're going to design your housing, who's going to live where. And it's school clinics. It has whole sections that are just brainwashing the children about different aspects of their health care and their mental health. People just have no conception how draconian this bill is, how oppressive it is.
Well, all we can do is try to get people to understand they're going to phase this in very, very slowly, as we mentioned earlier, and so that, you know, certainly Obama will probably be out of office before this is has been passed. But, you know, it's really being implemented about 2014. But understand, this is part of a much larger effort. It's about the destruction of America. There really are people who hate this country, who hate our Constitution, who hate freedom, and I believe Barack Obama is one of those people, I believe, but he is there because the people put him there, the Brotherhood of Darkness put him there, and they've allowed him to do this to our country. So it's not Obama, it's not the fact that he's a despicable individual, and there's a great deal we could talk about that is very, well, about immorality. We won't get into that tonight, but it is the people who put him there that's really important. This will bankrupt America, but America's already bankrupt. I suspect it's going to collapse financially within the next 10 years. Their Social Security will not exist unless, well, maybe they raise the retirement age to 75, and we could probably make the thing work. Medicare will not work unless we raise the retirement age to 75, and then they're not going to be able to get care after they're 75 because you're probably going to die anyway. All of these Ponzi schemes are going bankrupt. And the American people find it difficult. I mean, we don't want to give up Social Security. We don't want to give up the free health care we're getting here when we're over 65 years of age. I mean, we're entitled to it, and people don't understand that free men aren't entitled to anything. And a government that can give you whatever you want has got to be able to take whatever you have. A government that can provide for you from cradle to the grave has got to be able to control you from the cradle to the grave. And ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into a fascist society. Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, I think one of the worst forms of slavery is voluntary slavery. And that is when you give up your life, your rights, your honor, everything, to get a federal handout. And that's what Social Security is. I get this check. I'm going to get this check. Well, do you realize they stole your money all of your life with a promise they're going to pay it back to you? People, the situation I'm in, I'll never get a fraction of it, and people who paid hardly any into it are going to get a lot more than they paid into it. So, you know, if you want to sell your soul and your freedom for a paltry handout that you could have made a lot more on your own, then I feel sorry for you. I think you've made a very poor decision.
Well, we're going to see entering very, very difficult times. The whole fabric of our economic system is beginning to come down, and certainly as we move into the next part of the recession, it's going to be far worse than it has been before. Knowledgeable people will admit we're in a depression, and this is going to be far worse than anything we saw in the 1930s. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, you know, one of the principles of revolutionary faith is...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
Certainly claims for it, but I can tell you Dr. Blaylock has worked very well on this. Certainly, the telephone number is 1-800-SPECIAL. 1-800-SPECIAL. Let me suggest you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and you can simply just scroll down to a brain health, a brain lipid health banner there, and click on it. It'll take you to their website, but it is an excellent product, and I certainly recommend it to you. And then, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. And if you're not in a position to help, and I know many people are hurting, and I fear before long many more people are going to lose so much of what they have, why, of course, then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. If you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You have not yet seen the DVD series, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, because there is a secret mystery. There were secret societies when America was created, and it was created for a specific purpose, which most of the founders had no idea, but some of them knew exactly what it was about, because they were aligned with the mystery religions at that time. The Secret Mystery series, 3 professional DVDs, very well done, need to be watched over and over again. And you can get one of them or all of them together. And then, of course, we have my little pamphlet set, the 3 pamphlets called The Occult Hierarchy. We have a 4 DVD set called The Supernatural, and the book that goes with that is entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil. It's written by Joanna Michelson. We have a book and a 4 tape set, Satanic Crimes. You can get them together at a reduced price. You need to have this information. You need to understand that the Bilderbergers, of course, the book Satanic Crimes and the 4 tape set goes into the Bilderbergers. And the Bilderbergers, these people of great wealth who are into pedophilia, went, of course, over in Belgium. They had a march of 300,000 people wearing white to complain about this evil organization. Why not a mention in the controlled media here in the United States? Because these wicked and evil people are the people who control the wealth of the world. And then, of course, we have so much other information. We have certainly Alex Jones' excellent DVD, Endgame, goes into the Bilderbergers. That's Endgame, goes into certainly population control as well.